It's full speed ahead for General Motors' self-driving car ambitions. The automaker announced Thursday a $2.25 billion investment, one of the largest ever for self-driving technology, from Japan's SoftBank, that's sure to shake up the race on who takes the lead in the autonomous vehicle market. GM will throw in another billion or so dollars after the deal closes. The SoftBank investment comes at a time when Tesla, Alphabet's Waymo, and Uber are all also jockeying for a first-market advantage for self-driving vehicles, and in some cases, specifically for ride-sharing fleets nicknamed robo-taxis.
There's a relatively new trend of brands infusing gold in their athletic apparel. Gold is said to help with odor control and stop the development and spreading of bacteria caused by sweat. So you can wear these garments a few more times in between washes. The trend of using precious metals in clothing has been happening with silver, but on a much larger scale since silver is known to be antibacterial.
America's hard-hit coal country is seeing a minor recovery these days with rising exports, but also making a comeback. Coal mining's dreaded companion, black lung. After dropping off sharply, the notorious disease caused by inhaling coal dust is on the rise again in Appalachia. Doctors seeing new cases in record numbers. One health worker here calls the resurgence a pandemic.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is June 4th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day and another business week getting underway. Today on the broadcast, it's CEO Spotlight Monday. Tom Riley is going to be here, the CEO of TapCloud. We'll bring him in just a minute. A little later in the program, Jerry O'Brien, the executive director at the University of Wisconsin's Kohl Center for Retailing. We're going to be talking about Midwest retail, what the trends are, and what some of the latest data shows. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up about 130 points. NASDAQ futures are up 30. S&P futures are up about 10 this morning. Around the rest of the globe, in London, the FTSE is up about 0.5%. The DAX is up about 0.25%, and the CAC in France is up about 0.5%. And in Asia, markets are generally higher as well, with the Nikkei up almost 305 points, the Hang Seng up 500 points, good for about 1.5% on each, the Shanghai higher as well. Oil is trading this morning at $65.67 a barrel, which is down about 14 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. China says the door is open in principle to more trade talks with the United States to head off those planned and threatened tariffs by the United States against China. The United States and China have threatened a tit-for-tat tariffs on goods of up to $150 billion each. The two countries ended their latest round of negotiations yesterday, with the U.S. Commerce Secretary and his delegation leaving Beijing without making a public statement, and China making no mention of any new agreements. Following that meeting, though, the Chinese say that the door will remain open to further talks in the future, if they occur. Global Airlines today slashing their forecast for industry profits in 2018 on a spike in fuel costs, while warning higher interest rates and a host of other geopolitical tensions will add to operating risks. Passenger yields, which are a proxy for fares, are expected to rise by 3.2% this year, but the air carriers say they expect to post a $33.8 billion profit this year, 12% below a previous forecast of about $38.4 billion. And Germany's Bayer Group will wrap up the $63 billion takeover of Monsanto this week, and they say that they will retire the U.S. seed maker's 117-year-old name when they do that. Front and center this morning on our CEO Spotlight, Tom Riley, the CEO of TapCloud, is with us. We're going to talk a little bit more about TapCloud and welcome him into the show this morning. Tom, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for being with us. Tell us about TapCloud.
Well, about 11 years ago, my mom was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and my sisters and I spent the next 5 years really trying to be very involved with her care, driving her to her appointments and making lists of things to talk about with the doctor. And one of the things that we found very quickly is that whenever something bad would happen, when we really started to understand what was behind it, the signs had been there days and sometimes even weeks earlier, but we just didn't know what to watch for. So I developed TapCloud as a technology solution that would allow people across hundreds of different conditions and thousands of different medications to know what to watch for and to be able to communicate more easily with their doctors.
Now, and give us a sense of that. I know that going through how it works on your website, it's a communication between doctors and patients, and it could be anything from I feel kind of bloated today or I feel kind of stuffy to more serious conditions, right?
Yeah, Steve, you make a great point there. The things that are important don't often look important in the early stages. So, one of the seminal moments in my experience with my mom was just noticing that she had been scratching her arm a little bit when we were at lunch one day. And I asked her what was going on, and she said, I just have some dry skin. And we never thought about it again. We didn't talk about it with her doctors or anything. And we found out a couple months later that she had actually developed an allergic reaction to her chemotherapy that she was taking. And so that dry skin wasn't dry skin. It was a rash. And it was the early warning sign of an allergic reaction. And this is what happens for people struggling with serious illness is the things that matter often don't look like they matter when they first show up. And so what our technology does is allows people to recognize that the thing that you're seeing may not seem important. In fact, it may just seem like a little patch of dry skin, but it may actually be important. And so by helping them watch for the right things, we're increasing that communication to the doctors and nurses who are caring for these patients. Because if anybody had ever said, if my mom or I had ever said, I think I've got a rash, the care team would have reacted to that. They know what to watch for. It's just that they don't always know what's going on.
Tom, what does the interface look like? You were talking there about your mom. Their generations have different levels of usage with the technology. How does it help on all of those levels?
Yeah, it's funny that you should ask that because actually our primary interface is a cloud. It's a word cloud that actually changes each day, that watches for over 100 different diagnoses and 15,000 medications, and is personalized for each user. So what you essentially would see on the screen is your phone would chime at you and say, how are you feeling today? And it would show you a word cloud of a collection of different words, physical symptoms, emotional symptoms, positives, negatives. But each word on that page has been chosen by our algorithms to be relevant for you based on your diagnosis and the specific medications you're taking. So, for example, if you start taking a new prescription medication, the words on that page will change to reflect the side effect profile of that medication. So essentially, you're watching for the right things, even if you don't know what the right things are.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Markets overseas opened higher and stock futures are up, indicating a positive opening for Wall Street. This despite new fears of a global trade war. China put the U.S. on notice Sunday that if Washington goes through with tariff hikes, all trade deals are off. China says weekend trade talks between the U.S. and China ended with positive and concrete progress, but neither side released details. The National Association for Business Economics has issued its latest quarterly outlook. It says the economy should expand this year and next, but a recession is possible in 2020. Pope Francis will meet with some of the world's oil executives this week. He wants them to do more about global warming. And it was another successful launch for Elon Musk's SpaceX this morning. A Falcon 9 rocket blasted off from Cape Canaveral, Florida. Its mission, deliver a powerful satellite into space that will deliver TV and broadband data to the Asia-Pacific Rim. Mona Rivera, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell. on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're live from 303 East Wacker, our new headquarters, this morning for the opening bell. And we're on this morning with Tom Riley, CEO of TapCloud, Northbrook-based. Tom, before the break, we were talking about how this is easily used by patients, allows them to communicate better with their doctors. What's the integration look like with those doctors? How are you mixing this in with their work? Is it in will it be in hospitals? What's the setting?
Sure. So we work with hospitals, with surgical groups, with healthcare organizations like hospice and palliative organizations. Essentially, the healthcare system is going through a transformation that's really causing it to focus much more on several different aspects of patient care. Reducing cost, improving patient satisfaction and the experience that the patient has, and also improving actual measurable healthcare outcomes. And in all of those things, the patients being involved and knowing and being able to communicate more effectively with their care team is a critical component to achieving those goals. From a clinical perspective, essentially, the patient's use of our platform creates a stream of information that's coming in that's then watched by our alert system, which knows which symptoms or which changes in vital signs matter based on the diagnosis that the patient has, and then we trigger alerts to the care team, which allows them to respond more quickly to the patients. So we're catching things a few days earlier than we would if we waited for the symptoms to develop into something more serious and for the patient to show up at the emergency room.
This looks like it's iPhone, iPad, other smart devices.
It is completely cross-platform, so it's a native app for Apple products and Android products, Amazon Fire as well, but it's also can be used on any computer. So essentially, if you can connect to the internet, you can run TapCloud.
What's the business plan here? Is this something that the physicians will pay for, the hospitals and clinics will pay for, or how will you make money off of this?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. It was very important to us when we were starting out to decide how we wanted to grow this idea into a business. And the thing that we avoided was charging patients or making it about advertising. We think that the kind of interaction that a patient has with TapCloud is very intimate. They share very personal symptoms about what they're experiencing day to day. And if that was just turning into ads that were coming right back at them, I think it would actually change the experience. So we sell to the healthcare system, into insurance companies, hospital systems, physicians groups, surgical groups who are trying to improve outcomes, to improve patient satisfaction, and to ultimately lower costs.
Tom, earlier when you were talking about the words that appeared in the cloud on this app, I was thinking in the back of my head, you know, when people are away from their doctors and maybe even far away from their doctors, this is going to be the wave of the future, isn't it? Artificial intelligence, robots, these sort of telemedicine devices to keep us all well.
Yeah, actually, we use artificial intelligence and machine learning to create that cloud each day. So for 104 different conditions and 15,000 medications, we have built algorithms that say, for a patient with this particular diagnosis taking these medications, what are the words that should be shown to that patient? And then each time the patient uses it, it learns about that patient and gets smarter about what words to show them tomorrow. So in other words, if you said you had a sore throat today, tomorrow we may ask if you have a cough. Because we know the relationship between those things. Our system is trying to figure out if you have a cold or the flu. And then broader, it takes a look at all the patients with that same diagnosis. So if a patient in Argentina was reporting symptoms or enough different patients with the same diagnosis as you have, those symptoms will start to show up in the cloud as well. So essentially, the system is trying to learn from both your individual experience and the collective experience of people with the same diagnosis.
What is next for TapCloud? Where do you see yourself in a couple of years?
Well, we've got a lot of really exciting stuff going on. We've just started a program in Canada, where we and a couple of other organizations collectively won a RFP to provide surgical support services to the citizens of Ontario, Canada. And so working with our partners at Matter, Safe Start Medical, and In Touch Health, we're spending some time up in Toronto in that area talking with their hospitals about deploying services to help their patients.
Well, Tom, we're happy that you spent a little time with us this morning. We appreciate you being with us here in the opening bell.
Thank you so much, Steve. It was great talking to you.
And Tom Riley is the CEO of TapCloud. You can find more about it at tapcloud.com. We'll link out to it again in our podcast of the opening bell a little bit later on this morning.
Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio. A rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. Delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Google is bringing a mini golf course on a four-city tour this summer, and it's swinging through Chicago June 14th through 17th. Google announced that it's built a Google Home mini golf course, a pop-up course designed to promote its Google Home devices. Facebook and Google have both been looking at expanding their offices in Chicago, according to the Chicago Tribune. Facebook is reportedly looking to lease 200,000 square feet in the Loop, and Google has plans to add more than 100,000 square feet of office space in the Fulton Market area. And several Chicago investors were backers in Ahology, a Cincinnati startup that was just acquired by Quotient Technology, the parent company of Coupons.com, in a deal worth up to $50 million. Hyde Park Angels, Hyde Park Venture Partners, and Origin Ventures all participated in the marketing tech startup Series A. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the opening bell. We thought we'd spend this segment looking at retail in the Midwest. Jerry O'Brien is executive director of the University of Wisconsin's Kohl Center for Retailing and is with us this morning. Jerry, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What would you say is the top story in Midwest retail? Is it the slow, agonizing demise of Sears, or would it be something else?
Oh, I don't think that's the top story. It's certainly it's one we've been watching for a long time. I think the real story is how customers are kind of imposing their will, and a lot of retailers are working really hard to make it a better experience for them. So the customers are winning in all of this.
Would you be referring to perhaps Target? Target doing delivery now to customers, getting in on that game? Is that what you might be referring to?
That's part of it. It's things like delivery. People have changed their expectation. You know, it used to be if you ordered, you thought if you got it in 8 days, it was a pretty good deal. And now there's a battle to see if they can deliver same day, next day, et cetera. But it's also people expect a better experience in the stores. They want you to do something to get them off their chair and actually have a great experience in the building or to show them new products. Offer surprises, as I like to say, trying to surprise and delight the customer. So you've got things like Kohl's over the holidays tested having Amazon return centers in their store to make that more convenient. Looks like they're going to test having grocery in their store, something new for them. You've got places like Land's End in the Midwest here, who has been primarily online and catalog, and now they're going to open 50 boutiques around the country. You've got Farm and Fleet, a Midwest company, expanding into Michigan. So there's really a lot of changes that primarily are trying to figure out how do you keep that customer happy.
It wasn't so long ago we were on this broadcast, and I know others were talking about it too, that retail was failing. It sounds to me like they've managed to find a way to keep going, even despite some of the Amazon power.
Well, I think failing is probably never been true, really. There's been a huge disruption. There's certainly been a lot of companies. So certainly Sears just announced closing a number of stores. Boston stores out of part of Bon-Ton in the Midwest closed. So there's certainly been a big disruption, a shakeout, but you're going to still see winners that are, to your point, they're making those changes that customers demand, and they're getting rewarded for it. So while it's hard to say retail's failing, people still need stuff. And as long as people shop, we're going to have retailing. The challenge right now is consumers are really feeling powerful and expect to be satisfied completely. And the companies that succeed are going to try to meet those expectations.
Yeah, I probably misspoke, and what I meant was the brick and mortar aspect of this,
perhaps more than retail
mm-hmm. itself. How have consumers gotten this message across to retailers? Is it just by not shopping there? Is it by going in and saying, hey, we want this? How are they making their will known?
Consumers have always made their will known with their pocketbook. So when you see companies that are closing stores, you can imagine that when you talk to your neighbors, a lot of people haven't shopped there. When you see businesses that are doing better, you hear people saying, oh, hey, you know, I saw something new at this company. That was pretty exciting. And in addition, retailers and a lot of businesses are realizing that consumers are looking beyond just the core business and into some of the value type statements. So are they sustainable? Are they investing in their communities? Do they feel like that when you spend your money, it's actually improving your own community?
And that's a big, that's also generational too, I would imagine, with millennials. How much are millennials driving some of this change?
A lot of it. They are now the biggest shopping group in the country. They've passed the boomers as far as numbers in the right age. I'm not sure they have the spending power quite yet. But it's a huge, there's a huge interest in connecting with the millennial because the future of your business is going to depend on it. And they have completely or significantly different expectations than the boomers and the Gen Xers.
Is there any hope in here for Main Street, some of these mom and pop small businesses to compete in this retail environment? I know there was a lot written a decade ago about how Walmart was killing Main Street and these big box stores were killing Main Street. What's the story there?
I think you're right. It's interesting. We've been prognosticating the death of Main Street for a long time, and it still keeps going. So it was supposed to be the big box retailers that killed it, and now it's supposed to be Amazon and online. And yet, actually, I think that's opened a lot of opportunity. So the idea that you can open a store in a small town or even in a big town in a small type shopping area, but really expand your market by adding online gives you a lot more opportunities. And also the day that we talked about the millennials a minute ago, they like to see differences. The sameness of retail is difficult for them or is not very appealing to them. And, you know, if you can find your right niche, I think this is actually a very opportunistic time for you.
Is it geographical, too? Is it some states are doing better than others in retail?
That's a great question. I couldn't tell you state by state. It seems to vary. Again, as long as people need things, you're going to have retail. I do think there's a certain, you know, whether you have the supply chains and with the overnight or same day delivery, supply chain and delivery is very important. So the infrastructure is important. But I've seen the more rural states actually have pretty solid economies and appear to be doing pretty well with this. And certainly our more urban markets, they're offering a lot, literally the same day type delivery type things. And certainly have the foot traffic to help that Main Street retailer.
Just below the surface, there's also lots going on in the grocery sector, with Kroger getting big the Home Chef in their stores. I think recently, others fighting too for a share of this. What's going on in the grocery sector?
Well, it's pretty much the same thing that Kroger buying Home Chef, as you said. They looked up and saw, boy, this is a avenue the customers want. And if we want to continue to be viable or relevant to the customer, we're going to need to get into it. So they bought it. And you'll see a lot of that where a startup or a smaller type company does find that niche or that exciting thing. And the big ones that want to stay relevant are either trying to find their own angle on it or they buy them up and get them involved. Grocery has always been pretty cutting edge in retail because they get a lot of customers. You know, their shops per week are more often. From a customer, you get to the grocery store more often than perhaps you do to a department store. So they test more and they get a lot faster feedback.
And the delivery through is, I know with stores here in the Chicago area, this is becoming, again, a big thing. It was before with Peapod. We saw those delivery trucks many years ago, and now everybody's back into the delivery mode.
Well, exactly. And it's because the customers are demanding it. You want to stay relevant. It's a challenge for grocers. Their margins were already pretty low, and we're adding delivery to it. But you don't have an option if the customer says, you know, for me to shop with you, that needs to be available.
Jerry, what would you say would be the next disruption in retail, if you had to predict?
Well, Yeah, I think you're going to see stores with smaller square footage. You're already seeing some of this. You're going to see in the brick and mortar stores more experiential, probably less product on hand in the stores because it can be delivered so quickly. So they'll try to change and make the square footage in the building more of an opportunity to provide that pizzazz to surprise and delight, as I mentioned earlier.
Well, we appreciate your insight this morning and appreciate you being with us here in the opening bell. Have a great day.
You too, Steve. Thank you very much.
Jerry O'Brien is the executive director of the University of Wisconsin's Kohl's Center for Retailing with us this morning here on the opening bell.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures up 133 points this morning. NASDAQ futures are up about 10. Make that 28. S&P futures are up about 10 this morning. Now the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As usual on Monday during the growing season, we look forward to getting the crop condition report Monday afternoon. And particularly after getting the first report a week ago that showed the good to excellent category in corn at 79%. That was well above trade expectations. But then on Friday, the corn crop, in the marketplace at least, is subject of long liquidation and favorable crop conditions, and that put the corn market down, and along with the other grain markets as well. And bargain buying Friday and short covering helped the lean hog contract at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The news going into the weekend, Bayer won U.S. approval for its planned takeover of Monsanto after agreeing to sell about $9 billion in assets. And that cleared a major hurdle for the $62.5 billion deal that will create by far the largest seed and pesticides maker and seller in the world. A Bayer spokesman said the planned sale of businesses with $2.5 billion in sales to BASF already agreed to address antitrust concerns, mainly in Europe, that were not materially different from the Justice Department here in the United States. So today we look forward to getting the crop report and a quick report on Harvard Milk Days over the weekend, good weather and good crowds to get the June Dairy Month celebration off to a good start. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. A group of top business economists believes the major tax cuts that President Trump pushed through Congress will give a significant boost to economic growth this year and next year. But they worry that by 2020, the country could be entering a new recession. The National Association of Business Economics says in its latest quarterly outlook that its panel of 45 economists expect the economy as measured by gross domestic product to expand 2.8% this year. That's down slightly from the panel's March forecast of 2.9%. And you'll remember that the Trump administration had been expecting GDP of 3% or higher to make its goals in the tax cuts. Still not many people on the lower end of the spectrum feeling those tax cuts, a lot of that being offset, too, now by higher gas prices and the price of tariffs being passed on to consumers. Japan's finance minister has taken a voluntary one-year salary cut, and 20 other officials were penalized for tampering with documents related to the government sale linked to the prime minister's wife. The finance ministry there acknowledged tampering with hundreds of pages of documents related to a 2016 land sale. There's no word on whether Shinzo Abe will face a corruption or misconduct charge in all of this. The buyers of Toshiba Corporation's memory device operations are promising to invest in technology development and manufacturing facilities to stay competitive, although they stopped short of giving any specific monetary amount or naming a new factory site. The $2 million deal, I should say the $2 trillion deal for the consortium led by Bain Capital Private Equity to acquire Toshiba Memory, closed June 1st after clearing antitrust regulatory approval. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, June 4th. Not a lot on the calendar today. We'll get a report on factory orders. We'll also see a number of auctions, including a five-month bill auction, a three-month auction, and a four-week bill announcement. So we're looking ahead later this week. We'll get the PMI Services Index tomorrow, the ISM Non-Manufacturing Index, the JOLTS report, the Job Opening Labor Turnover Survey. On Wednesday, the mortgage applications from MBA, productivity and cost, international trade report. Thursday, a report on jobless claims, the natural gas report coming. We'll also get a report on consumer credit on Thursday. Wholesale trade report coming on Friday. Just some of the things that could move the markets.